This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm going in tomorrow, unless there's a problem. And it does feel like I'm starting to catch my wife's cold. Rats. It's doing so good there for a while. It's doing so good. But she's been sick for days. Hacking and coughing. She actually has had to sleep in the recliner last several nights, just trying to, you know, get a good night's rest, etc., etc. I've got a little bit of burning back in my nose, started up yesterday, but I was fasting yesterday, and so, you know, it's like, well, maybe not, maybe not. So I'm on the Zycam, taking it every 3 hours, trying to get ahead of it. But it'll be fine. It will be fine. So all is well at work. Oh, bonk, bonk. All is well at work. We're puttering along. We got a new version of K2, which is the business process management system we're working with. And they've done a lot of really nice work, so that's encouraging. So, you know, all is well there. We're moving forward with our deadlines. We're getting forms created. You know, step at a time, step at a time, step at a time. That all seems to be going well. And the nice thing about K2 is we can get some stuff done, you know, fairly quickly. So that kind of shortens the time from when we're talking about something to when we're actually getting ready to deploy it. So had a bunch of meetings today on that kind of stuff, and that all went well. Writing is going fine. As I mentioned last week, I lost Sunday, which is 3,000 words. But so far this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I was able, and those are my low writing days, I was able to get back about 1,200 of those words. So I'm only 1,800 words down, and I'm hoping maybe I can get another 250 extra done tonight, and so maybe I'm only 1,500 words down, and then if I put in a big push on the weekend, you know, maybe, I can get to 3,000 for this week. If I can't, you know, that's okay too. I'll be all right. I've got one more week on this sprint, and we've got the beta readers have another 2 weeks, so I need to send them an email tonight, tomorrow, because the deadline is 2 weeks away for them. I've heard back from some of the beta readers, had some positive things. I think I have at least one beta reader who's mad at me. That's okay. You know, part of this process is just moving forward, doing the best I can. I'm a little weird as a writer because I'm not really trying to entertain readers. I'm not trying to offend them. You know, I'm not. What I'm doing is I'm trying to figure out the world. And so when I'm thinking deeply about something, that filters into my writing. And then what I do is I take the stuff I'm thinking about, and I've got all these characters from all kinds of different backgrounds, and I can just throw them into this situation, and then I can just work it out in my brain. It's my simulator. And then I'm not saying that all my characters are going to make the best decisions, because I try to be true to my characters. So I've got characters that are going to make good decisions. I've got characters who are going to make bad decisions. But in all those things, I think about the decision process they're going through and why they're making the decisions they make. And then I think I learn from that. Because then I can say, oh yeah, you should right now You should push the intercom button. You should call people into your office. You should get these people out of your office. As opposed to just sitting there. You know, you should do this, you should do that. And hopefully it kind of gives me a dry run on some things. Not only helps me understand people's motivations better, but gives me a dry run on things. Things not to do. I got really tickled because I was watching a longevity seminar where there was a moderator, and then there was a male scientist, a female scientist, and then a medical doctor who's been working in the area of aging. And the moderator was a writer, and so he started talking off about, you know, he gave all the credentials for everybody and yada, yada, yada. And then at one point, he starts off with the medical doctor, who's an older man, and he said, well, how would you describe aging? And the medical doctor said, well, the best way I could describe aging is to, you know, kind of tell the old standard joke where you've got an older man and woman that are in their retirement and they're sitting there, you know, watching TV or something at night. And so the old woman turns to the old man and she says, you know, why don't we just go upstairs and make love? And supposedly the man turns and he says, I can do one or the other, but I can't do both. And of course, then people, ah, oh, it's funny. Okay. But see, to me, I'm sitting there and I'm watching this and I'm thinking, so the first story out of your mouth has got to have sexual overtones to it. Because you think everybody wants to hear a story with sexual overtones to it. But when you watch the woman when he's telling this story, she doesn't look like she's necessarily that thrilled with that topic. And then, so it came to her, she said some things, nothing to do with anything. And then it came to the male scientist, and he made some comment that had sexual overtones to it as well. It wasn't sexual abuse or harassment or anything like that, but, you know, it has sexual overtones to it. And I'm just watching them going, guys, you really don't get this. You think it's funny and you think this is something everybody wants to talk about. You think, you know, but why don't you just find another way to discuss without always putting sexual overtones into things? Because they're guys and lust blinds. Well, that's what I'm doing with my writing, you know, as well. I'm trying to put characters in situations, and some of them are horrific situations. Some of them are abusive situations. Some of them are, I mean, they're not great situations. Every single one of my books in Windfall has something in it that's terrible and horrific. And yet, obviously, not all the readers are offended at the same things. In fact, there are some things that I thought, oh, this is going to upset somebody. It never upsets anybody. But in book 7, you know, I did the core dump on gender relationships, and yeah, I get pushback on this one, which is fine. That's fine. If people will actually engage me and want to talk to me, I'm more than happy to say, yep, I knew I was probably going to get pushback on this, but I felt like this was something that needed to be discussed. So, and yet then I have other people who've, they're fine with it. Mostly guys, they're fine with it. You know, they're like, yeah, that's right. So it's going to be, this is very interesting. I may, if I get enough hate comments, I've decided I may just put those on the cover. Just have everybody on the cover this time be roundly critical of the book and saying, we hate this book. Because at least it'll give people a hint that something is coming in this book that is, you know, way over the top. And it's not really way over the top. I mean, it is true to all the characters. There's nothing manufactured. there. There's nothing, and if you go back and read the rest of the books, you'll see that I'm actually dropping hints all along the way that this is coming. You know, I foreshadow all the philosophies that are discussed in this book are foreshadowed through all the other books. So it's interesting. It's interesting. I know my daughter, for one, you know, she liked the book. She said it was good, but she didn't like how the book ended because it ends with a cliffhanger. So, you know, it's basically just grinding through this huge 500-page book of just stuff going wrong and that kind of stuff. And then you get to the end of it and ta-da, to be continued. So, yeah, but that's fine. So it's fascinating. It's fascinating. And it's fun. And I'm working on the next book, and the next book is going well. And we'll get a lot of the things resolved. Move on. So anyways, I did get away from work late today. That means I'm going to take a drink of water here. I did get away from work late. That means I have no light. So that means I really can't see my notes. So we're just gonna wing this. I watched a TED Talk, and it's a little older TED Talk, and I double checked, and I haven't done this TED Talk, but a lot of the concepts are familiar. And the TED Talk was regarding addiction and how our brains become addicted and what is actually happening in addiction. And it's really a fascinating thing. I mean, we immediately, when we say addiction, we think of things like, you know, addicted to sex or addicted to drugs or addicted to cigarettes or addicted to those things, but addiction functions just as easily in sugar and certain types of foods. And the question is, what is really going on there? Because we, as the speaker said, we have a story that we tell about addiction. And the story is, imagine a pleasure so intense that you would be able to, willing to get up, give up everything to have it. That you would have a pleasure so intense that it became the most important thing in your life. And she said, and in fact, she said, when you talked to Doc, yeah, I'm having a little trouble with the voice. She said, when you talk to addicts and you work with addicts, you find that all of them want to quit. And when they talk about their drug habit, it's not that the pleasure is intense. In fact, a lot of them say they don't even like the feeling they get when they inject the drugs. So she was saying, you know, what is really going on here? And in fact, what is really going on is fairly insidious. Several years ago, they were able to start taking PET scans of brains and of the parts of the brains that are lighting up and things that are going on. And what they found is that dopamine response, D2 something connectors in the brain, dopamine response in addicts is markedly decreased. And these particular receptors are the receptors that are in the portions of the brain that are responsible for executive function. And so when this person is becoming addicted to these substances, it appears that what is happening is the brain is losing its capability to say no to these substances. Not Not necessarily that it wants more of them, but it has less capability of saying no to them. Because they've been become addicted to this dopamine response, and that dopamine response then reduces their ability to refuse it in the future. Which is pretty interesting. I mean, she went on several sentences talking about obesity and how it reduces your life. And she said, how could people look at all the things that obesity does to them and still want to overeat? And she said, you know, the fact of the matter is that what's happening in obesity is just like what's happening in other types of addictions, that people are actually losing their ability to make good decisions. It becomes much harder for them to make good decisions about what food. But she said there's also other factors involved, which of course, yes, there are. And some of those factors are that if you eat real food, when you become hungry, you eat real food and you do reach a point where you are satiated. You don't want to eat any more food. The problem, as we've talked about many, many times, the problem with modern food is that it is specifically designed to not have the consumer experience that point of satiation. It's designed to not have a normal dopamine response, but to create a dopamine spike that is much faster, much higher, and declines much quicker. And so in the process of doing that, then you end up with creating addiction faster, and you get these dopamine spikes that then cause the body to become resistant to that. You lessen the activity so that the next time that presentation is made, it's harder to refuse that. And she did say something that was very interesting. She said, this dopamine system is excellent. She said, because we have to be rewarded for certain behaviors. If we weren't rewarded for those behaviors, we wouldn't do them. So she said, like eating, it's important to be rewarded for eating, because if you don't eat, you die. And she said, it's important to be rewarded for procreating, because if we weren't rewarded for procreating, then people would lose interest in procreating, and then the species would die. So again, we get back to these rituals of reproduction that are necessary, but don't necessarily contribute to the best life for us. And so part of our challenge here on Earth is to figure out how to exist within these rituals of reproduction and how to deal with the dopamine. Because everybody's going to get their dopamine from somewhere. But if you're careful, you can get your dopamine and enjoy your little dopamine hits, but not get addicted to it. And that's really what's important. I'm back in my garage. Let me grab my notes and let's just see if there's anything else that was important in here. Blah, 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 blah. Dopamine receptors, biological urges. This was the follow-up of what she had said that was interesting. She said, not only do we have a dopamine system that rewards us when we do the act, she said the dopamine system actually anticipates the act. She said, like for me, she said, it's chocolate. I love chocolate. She said, I can put a picture of chocolate up. And she said, all of a sudden, I'm thinking, chocolate. And she said, if the chocolate was here, I would eat the chocolate. So she said, both for men and women alike, just imagining something that we really enjoy will give us a dopamine hit. And she said, that's a great thing too, because it allows us to future cast, et cetera, et cetera. She said, it's harder to resist the urges of chocolate, like when I'm really hungry. When I have been deprived of my dopamine hit for a while, then, you know, it gets harder. Anyways, her thing was that we already know that food companies are doing this to us. We know that. We know they are designing foods to cause rapid spikes in dopamine to cause us to become addicted to their food. I mean, they know, we know that. And she was saying, why are we doing this, and why can't we be making plans for the future where we actually create a future where we are eating real food, we have good exercise facilities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I think that's a little hopeful, because really when we're talking about dopamine responses and talking about companies intentionally doing things to give us dopamine responses, well, what is that all about? That's about them making money. So I've said over and over and over, food companies have three priorities. They want to be able to get that food to last on the shelf as long as possible. They want to make it as cheap as possible, and they want you get you to eat as much of it as possible. And your health, your dopamine addiction doesn't factor in. They don't care. They don't care what that addiction does to you. They really want you to have that addiction because they know it'll lead you to eating more. So, yeah. So I don't know that there's going to necessarily be a solution in the future magically where, you know, suddenly we'll actually be building good, healthy alternatives, you know, where we'll be actually putting together parks that will have these, you know, beautiful playgrounds and this, that, and the other. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. And as to where all of this leads, I know there's a whole bunch of people that are trying to find drugs that, you know, we don't have to exercise any discipline. We're just going to take this pill and magic, you know. Well, yeah, that may work out, or it may not, because if what is true is the flesh and the spirit, that we're in this war with a flesh that is dedicated to our destruction, it will just find other ways to destroy us. And all the pills in the world are not going to save you from that. Because the flesh is an adversary that can only be defeated through spirit, through communication with Jesus, through accessing his help, through discipline, etc., etc., etc. So it'll be interesting to see where all that's leading. Apologize for being under the weather, and I am getting tired really fast. So, because it's evening, and you know how that goes when you've had a cold. So, this is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home. Oops, pushed the wrong button.